I know it's hard when you're up to your armpits in alligators to remember you came here to drain the swamp. Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. The court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Court is in Session. And it being Ronald Reagan Day, Ronald Reagan's birthday, we decided it would be a good, it would be fun to have two previous guests of the show, Mr. Francois Delecto and Alec Piergiorgi, back on the show to discuss the legacy of Ronald Reagan. And I feel like we're going to agree on some things and disagree on others. So it ought to be a good time. So, Mr. Delecto, Mr. Piergiorgi, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much for having us, Court.
It's always a pleasure.
So I like to start things off on the bright and sunny side. So I'm going to ask you both, what do you think is the best thing to come out of the Ronald Reagan presidency? And Alec, let's start with you.
I would have to say probably the Iran-Contra affair. continuing a great American tradition of arming foreign guerrillas to fight on whatever bipolar foreign policy we want to enact on that day. And I'm a big fan of that specific instance, mostly because of the name. I think it has nothing to do with Iran, and I enjoy it being called Iran-Contra affair for that reason. I think when we look back at a lot of the foreign policy interventions from previous presidents, I think this is objectively one of the coolest ones.
Well, it also brought Oliver North into American prominence, and how else would he have run the NRA except for that?
Right, because that's such a valuable and important organization.
Well, Court, since you said you wanted to start on the sunny side, I'll just say that the thing I always appreciated most about President Reagan was he did seem to really spark a new sense of optimism in the country that I think was psychologically healthy at the time for a lot of people who got to live through it, and kind of really did contribute a lot to chipping away at the previous sense of malaise and despair that had gripped the country from the middle of the Vietnam era through the end of the Carter administration.
Do you think we're in a similar malaise now? Like when a president that comes and makes everybody proud to be an American again, would that be a helpful thing? Do you think that's on the horizon, or do you think the climate is different than back during the Carter administration?
Both. I think the climate is different, but we are in another kind of funk, if you will. And the problem is, I think it's fundamentally different than it was in the Carter administration. I think at that time, people just felt like the country wasn't functioning properly, which I think a lot of people still feel today. But today, the difference is a great many folks are hyper skeptical that it will never be able to get back to where it was in terms of how well it serves its people. And I can't necessarily disagree with them. I really do kind of feel generally pessimistic about the future of the country in broad terms.
I don't think the current times, at least I don't think the economic current times are as bad as they were during the stagflation of the Carter administration, right?
Well, not yet.
Not yet. That's a good caveat. It'll be important to see if there is a Reagan figure that comes up out of nowhere.
Reagan didn't really come out of nowhere. He was running in Republican primaries as far back as
68. I mean, like come out of nowhere now.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't think there's a Reagan figure right now, besides maybe one of the governors that's been making a name for themselves during the COVID era.
And who would that be? There is another Ron on the scene. I have to.
Right. It would be Ron DeSantis. Yeah.
Do you not see him as a Reagan-like figure?
Nah, he's a Virgo.
Oh, right.
What was Reagan again?
He was an Aquarius.
Oh, right. I don't know. I hope Ron would be better than Reagan. I think he has the opportunity to be better and actually deliver on a lot of the promises that he's been making.
Spoken like a true Leo, let me say.
So overall, was the Reagan presidency a good one or a bad one?
Wait, you have to. You have
oh,
to.
Oh, right, 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 right. Well, no, I will. You just kind of you brought my mind to that situation into kind of that question that I was going to ask. So I will answer, but I do want to ask you guys before I do answer. Do you think that overall the Reagan administration was a positive one or a negative one? Just one word.
Maybe.
Sure.
I would say possibly.
let me just elaborate on my maybe slightly. Depends on how you judge it. If you judge a presidency by like the trends it sets off and where they go, I would say no. If you judge a presidency by where the country is immediately after, or even 5 years after that person leaves office, then I would say yes.
Okay.
I think President Reagan delivered a lot of short-term benefits to the country, but I think kind of instigated or permitted to continue a lot of longer-term trends that have kind of gotten us to where we are today.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good way of looking at it, Mr. Delecto. I would also say, I guess for me to elaborate on my possibly, I would say about whether or not they had a substantial cultural impact on U.S. popular culture after their presidency. I think Reagan, that's something that Reagan really did achieve even just his personality. I would say something that's really hampering that is the amount of fetishism that goes on with him still in Republican circles. You know, Court and I from during a time in the FSU GOP, I mean, it just gets so ridiculous at times.
Yeah. And Donald Trump is starting to take that over, kind of take on that mantle of just the absolute fetishizing of what actually happened during the administration. So first I'm going to address the first question. Good thing to come out of the Reagan administration was obviously Rocky IV, the greatest piece of propaganda ever to, you know, be brought on this world, which is honestly such an over the top and incredible movie. But it kind of stems from that. I actually really do unironically love Rocky IV because it was and it goes into my the greatest thing to come out of the Reagan presidency, which was just this bar none anti-communist sentiment that we had really not seen since McCarthyism. And I'm all about having a country that just absolutely hates everything about communism. And I thought that was something, and again, that goes to Ronald Reagan's branding. I think he's given a lot more credit for ending the Cold War than actually like than he should. I think more of what happened was the USSR kind of fell on itself, kind of collapsed on top of itself. As Gorbachev kind of opened it up to the rest of the world, which needed to be done in order for them to like have food. But I think the anti-communist sentiment coming out of the Reagan administration was the best thing to come out of it.
Do you think it surpasses the awesomeness of McCarthy era anti-communism?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I'll say I don't know that much about McCarthyism, the McCarthy era anti-communism sentiment. I do know that it seemed to leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. And then, you know, Ronald Reagan's was more just like, look how great America is. And this, you know, they're not America, so they suck. Whereas McCarthyism was just like, let's fire everybody in Hollywood who, you know, may have gone to a communist meeting. So I don't know. That's a great question.
I think just the utter extravagance of the McCarthy era is so hard to beat with the labeling of literally everyone as a communist.
It is. Yeah. I do like to point out the two are connected to each other since in his Hollywood days, President Reagan was an FBI informant and indeed president of the Screen Actors Guild and testified before Congress, I think, in ways that supported Senator McCarthy's positions.
Hmm. Yeah, as far as anti-communist sentiments go, the McCarthy era was seconded really only by the Augusta Pinochet throwing people out of helicopters.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. I mean, we didn't get to that point, sadly. But I think Michael Malice makes this point that McCarthy was right to an extent. Like, there were a bunch of communists in the federal government, yeah. Like people that were spies for the USSR in the federal government in like high cultural places. And that's just sort of like completely brushed over now just because of, you know, he went a little bit too hard in the sauce sometimes.
Yeah, no, but there was a lot of that. The person who brought the U.S. dollar to the gold to the world's reserve currency, he was a Russian spy. There was a lot of people high up in American government who were communists. And
really, true. That is interesting. Yeah. That should have its own whole own episode, I think. That just that his one name, specific guy.
His name was Harry Dexter White. There's an awesome NPR podcast, Planet Money, about what actually happened. What happened at what's it called? The
Bretton Woods Conference.
Yes, the Bretton Woods Conference. About what actually happened there, and he totally screwed over John Maynard Keynes, and later he was arrested and turned out to be a Russian spy. But he, as far as we all know, that he was acting mostly only on American interests at the conference, or at least it worked out really well for us.
That is interesting. Wow.
Odd.
Odd.
Very odd. I don't really know what happened there. He was a boring, strange dude who turned out to be a Russian spy.
But he's probably one of those people that he was probably like an outcast in his regular like societal groups. And so the communists found him and like, hey, we'll treat you kind of nicely. And then he's like, all right, I guess I'm a communist now, because they would do that sometimes, which is probably why a lot of younger people are communists now. And they're being like propagandized by China or whatever. The communists.
That's a good point. You think they're just a lot of social outcasts who can't really socialize with normally and are taken in by these communists?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people make fun of libertarians for being like social outcasts, and they are, but that's mostly just because they're like retarded or autistic. But they have like usually pretty high confidence levels. Like, these are the most full of themselves people on the planet. And so they don't know how to talk to people, but they are confident. And so it's kind of different to the people that are more in the leftist or communist circles, where they don't have a lot of confidence. And then they're also like not that great in social situations. So as soon as someone comes up to them, they're like, oh yes, this works.
By the way, Alec, I'm sure you know this, but Francois, do you know how libertarians got the moniker as being autistic?
Most likely it is those, you know, the videos we see of like the libertarian presidential debates, you know, the ones where like people argue for like not having driver's licenses and stuff, and like they screech and howl when Gary Johnson says, I think driver's licenses are a good thing.
Well, I mean, yes and no. People saw that, and like people on the left always referred to, they always basically said nobody could hold these opinions unless they were autistic or had something wrong with them. And libertarians kind of adopted that. And
who said that?
That was like people on the left. Yeah.
Well, it's also accurate because I've been to quite a number of libertarian oriented social affairs, and it's you know, and I thought I was autistic, and then I'm dealing with these people, and it's just amazing how many of them can't hold a conversation or can't talk normally, and it's like, God Almighty, this is making me feel better about myself.
You know, I did go to precisely one libertarian gathering in my college days, and they did fit the internet archetype of an autistic male in many ways.
Yeah, for whatever reason, the college ones are stronger in this capability compared to some of the older ones that I've been to. I mean, some of the older ones are like, these are like more well-adjusted, like middle-aged people. So yeah, you can like hold conversations with them. They just have autistic views.
Yeah.
Well, the college ones, especially, you just after the meetings, everybody goes to somebody's apartment and gets high, which like that's
the meme.
Yeah, that's, then it makes meme, it like, yeah, actually bearable to be around these people.
I haven't done that, but I imagine it would be make it much worse.
Yeah, some of these people shouldn't get high, but it makes it better because you get high or drunk, and then so you don't care as much.
Oh, when I'm high, well, I become deeply misanthropic. But
no, that's not good.
Maybe that's more
me
about
being
me
the
than,
good.
Gotta choose a better
Ronald,
strain then.
Me being the good Ronald Reagan lover around here before, I've never been high, so I wouldn't know.
That's a good point. We have to practice dare.
I do no longer partake of that because I don't like it. But I was adventurous in my younger days.
Well, you're old and wise now.
Now, Mr. Delecto only partakes in the finest wines that he can find.
Only the finest wines in all of France.
That was part of the great part about being able to visit Francois Delecto's apartment was the wide variety of liqueurs that were there.
I believe it.
He has great taste.
Francois used to come to my parties in undergrad, and he would bring like actual glass tumblers. He had this like backpack where he'd have like decent scotches or whiskeys and actual like glassware at like these keggers. It was fantastic. It was very classy.
Hearing that described back to me, I think I sound a little autistic now, but
well, that's a good sign that you've grown as a person. I don't know how many times a day that I look back at something I did and I want to just go kill myself again.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I was a socially inept person back then. I still am, but I was even less socially apt back in my college days. But, you know, I had a good time. All right. So to get us back on track, my second question for y'all is, what is the worst thing to come out of the Reagan administration? We'll start with you, Francois.
I will just say, I think, and maybe this is something we could not have known at the time, but with the benefit of hindsight, I suspect ending the Cold War was a mistake. And you said that you think the Soviet Union was just sort of beginning to collapse under its own incompetence or internal problems or whatever you have. And while that may be true, I think President Reagan did kind of put pressure that accelerated that process. And I think the accelerated and triumphant end of the Cold War led us to make a lot of hubristic mistakes in the following period that have come to haunt us. In particular, some of our more ill-advised military adventurisms, most notably the war in Iraq, the second one, that is, maybe the first one. Mm.
But also
internal cultural problems, like the lack of an external enemy to really focus our cultural angst against. That Rocky IV could never be made today because we just don't feel the same way about China the way we used to feel about the old Soviet Union.
Well, is that a chicken and egg thing? Like if we made a new movie about, you know, some Italian dude beating up a Chinese guy, like you don't think that would make everybody like turn?
No, no, I really don't think it would.
Okay. Well, I've long advocated for. Oh, sorry, Alex.
No, you go. No, finish.
Well, no, I think it'd be great to have a movie about like Dwayne Johnson beating up some Chinese dude in China, and
that's kind of racist.
You know,
yeah, that's what people would say about it. That would be the whole story. I'm afraid that would be the end. That would just be it.
And who would he? Can you even name a Chinese person?
Well, I mean, Ivan Drago wasn't an actual Russian.
No, so what are you suggesting, we get a Japanese actor?
Yeah, that's kind of bad too.
Wait, what is that? Is Ivan Drago or
he's Swedish?
Was Dolph Lundgren is Swedish?
He is.
I had no idea.
He also has like multiple science degrees.
Yeah, he does. He has like in chemistry, I think. I think he's
chemistry. Yeah, I think he has like an honorary doctorate.
And he actually put what's Sylvester Stallone in the hospital when they were trying to make the scene look more realistic. Like in reality, he is significantly stronger as he looks. And he just like knocked him out and put him in the ICU for 3 days.
That's fantastic.
He's usually the best part of the Expendables movies.
Yeah.
Which are really good.
That's true.
I think I think Mr. Delecto's point about the Cold War is super interesting. I've not heard that before. And I would think that I actually have to partly agree with it because having the world be in a bipolar state of these two great forces at each at odds sort of keeps each other in check, where they kind of can't go over their limits to an extravagant degree. And I think that that's immediately what we saw once it became a unipolar world with the United States, and then they go and do all these things. And I think this is why the rise of China is also could be a good thing in the sense of just keeping the US in check and being like, listen, like you just can't fuck around all the time anymore and do all this crap. And then I think that also the fear of China is overblown, just like the fear of the USSR was overblown as well.
Now, why do you think China hasn't become as much of a public enemy as the USSR was?
I think it's probably because my initial thought would be there was the continued anti-communist sentiment from the McCarthy era that still lingered in the US, and so that just sort of like compounded it to now there were decades and decades of this anti ideological stance in the US bred into children, bred into the cultural media.
You could say it goes all the way back to the first Red Scare in like 1919 in the late Wilson, early Harding administration.
And so that just made it easier for them to build up the USSR as this big like public enemy number one. And I don't think people care about that anymore with China. China isn't like, China's really only like, I don't know, like communist in name only at this point. It's basically just a fascist regime. And
they go abroad much less as well. They're not
they're not as expanditory as the USSR is. They don't have the satellite states that they're controlling directly that the USSR did. China is very much just more like, this is our thing. The most that they're doing is the Belt and Road Initiative, which I mean every day a new African country is like, oh, we got fucked over, and so nobody likes them anymore. So I think that's probably why. And we get a lot of shit from China. So it's less of like, it's less of an immediate thought to say, oh, this is bad.
Well, also I think China largely controls Hollywood, which I think controls a lot of the way American people think. That's always something that like when I've wondered what the biggest differences are between the Cold War and kind of this new half Cold War we're in with China right now. Like, I think that's the big one is China has a lot of influence over Hollywood. I don't know if y'all would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much the influence is directly. I just know that there's a lot of, like rationally self, I don't even know if it's rational, but a lot of self-interested people in Hollywood that's kind of doing what they can. And they think that kowtowing to a degree to China is the best route forward.
I was gonna say I know very little about this issue except that John Cena meme where it like edits him into Mao's uniform and gives him his haircut.
yeah, that was really bizarre because then he gave that apology in Cantonese or Chinese.
Wasn't it Mandarin?
But or Mandarin? Yeah, sorry, Mandarin. Yeah. And it's just super weird to see that happening. And then it's like LeBron James too. It's like, because China is such a big market. So they kind of have to do this. And Americans don't really care enough to say, oh, we want this to happen.
I feel like there's got to be something more though. I mean, like,
what's more than just money?
I don't know, but John Cena and LeBron James already have tons of money. And they can be... they can get far more money than they could ever want to spend just by catering to American markets.
Well, Cortland, I don't know if you've seen Oliver Stone's Wall Street, but at one point, Charlie Sheen's character asks, I can't remember the actor's name, but the character's name is Gordon Gekko. Michael Douglas, that's the actor's name. How much is enough? And he says, it's never enough. And it's not really about the money. It's about the game. And for him, it was the game of Wall Street. And for these people, it's the game of getting new acting contracts.
Yeah, or getting new sports deals or something.
Yeah, like it's not about having enough. It's about just, you know, keep doing what you're doing because you're good at it. It feels good to do what you do well.
Yeah, and it's also just like new levels of fame. Like, you know, imagine like the feeling of going to a foreign country that you've never been to before and you don't speak the language, but you see a billboard with your face on it, or you see like people wearing stuff that has your face on it. You know, that's got to be an immense feeling. And so you want more of that too.
You just chase it.
Yeah, you just chase it. That or these people are like communist sympathizers for the Chinese regime.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
I think that's the least likely thing, because I don't think any of these people are like philosophically consistent or ideological. But I suppose there's always that, because there's always the tankies. So if there's like a certain amount of tankies in the regular population, I'd have to imagine that there's some tankies in like the Hollywood elite.
For those listening who may not know what a tankie is.
A tankie is usually a person that sort of like romanticizes or fetishizes authoritarian communism, a la Stalin or Mao. And they think that kind of to do communism is to with the heavy iron fist.
Not to do the annoying thing and somehow compare everything to Nazi Germany, but when discussing why so many people went along with the regime, the answer of a lot of the technical specialists was just like, it's because, you know, that's just what they'd spent their whole life doing. And it was just more of that, really, like in their little compartment, they couldn't see the big picture. They were just doing more of what they'd always done. And I think with even a big figure like John Cena, they're just continuing with their trade. You know, they specialize in doing certain things, acting and getting contracts and sports deals and all that. And they doesn't really matter where it's coming from. They just do more of what they've always done. Like that's how these things happen. You know, people just carry on and don't think about it too much.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. And a lot of people kind of think like, oh, well, I'm not really making an impact. I'm just kind of doing my own stuff.
That's a good point.
So, yeah. Like, you know, if you just make ball bearings, you don't really think about the tanks that they're going into and you don't think about what countries those tanks are crossing the border of. And you just don't think about the downriver effects of whatever individual task you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So to answer my question, my own question of what was the worst thing to come out of the Reagan administration, I think one thing that Reagan really did was, you know, we joked about DARE earlier, but he really pushed the, you know, hard on drugs thing. And this is something that Alec and I talked about in a previous podcast, is the amount of damage that the war on drugs has done to American society. And I think he, you know, that was going on well before he was in office. And I think that was just kind of something that you had to be in order to get elected. But, you know, I think for someone who, you know, at least in a lot of his early interviews and such, seemed to really be inspired by libertarian thought, specifically that of Barry Goldwater, I think it was a shame that he took such a hard on drugs stance that cost a lot of money and at the end really didn't net much good for the country.
Noam Chomsky always had a very interesting criticism of Ronald Reagan, where he said he wasn't, like, beyond the rhetorical lip service, like Noam Chomsky's estimation, not mine. The Reagan administration was actually very radical statist and like wildly expanded the scope and power of the federal government and its reach into like the everyday lives of not everyone, but of a lot of people in the country. And if you look at like the gist of what his rhetoric suggested he might believe in and what the administration actually, how it actually changed the face of the country for everyday people, they're quite different.
That's an interesting point. And it's pretty similar to a point that Milton Friedman made in his book, The Tyranny of the Status Quo, where he basically said what happened with the Reagan administration was that his theory is that every time you get elected, you have about 6 months to do whatever you want. And then kind of the Washington machine kind of takes over from there and continues to become larger and more prevalent in everybody's lives. I don't know how much weight I put behind that. Like, it's not even one of Milton Friedman's more popular works. And I don't think too many people know about it. But I wonder if it's A, you know, Ronald Reagan really wasn't that much of a conservative. He knew the country well and kind of did a Donald Trump where he was able to gauge the temperature and tell people what they wanted to hear to get elected.
Let's make America great again.
Let's make America great again. I mean, he was an old Democrat. Or if, you know, kind of the Washington machine took over his presidency.
Yeah, I would have to say that's probably one of my biggest criticisms of him is the fact that I think in the end, he was ultimately just a soft right New Deal California Democrat. And he didn't really push anything outside of that. He didn't want to repeal. He didn't want to repeal the New Deal. And I think that's a big failure for someone that's supposed to be such a conservative hero. But I think my least favorite thing about Ronald Reagan was actually before he became president, so when he was governor of California, when he pushed forward the most stringent gun control legislation that the country had seen at the time in California as he was governor. And I think that has set a horrible trend for the continued failure of our rights to be protected in this country.
Well, he also carried that on in his presidency. He was the one who signed the automatic weapons ban.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, I don't know, can you be any more cringe than that?
Yeah.
And how am I supposed to legitimately view him as a conservative hero if he's not going to stick up for the Second Amendment? And it's just like Trump, you know, it's just like they're the same in that aspect, too, because they're two light Democrats from Democratic places. So they never saw guns.
Yeah. Well, Reagan was originally from Tampico, Illinois. Mm. And I don't think it's fair to call the California of Reagan's day necessarily a Democratic place, because between 1968 and 1988, it did vote straight Republican on the presidential level. So it was
not as right wing as it could be.
No, but certainly, yeah, but certainly not. It's not, you know, what it is today.
It's not the left. Yeah, I'm not saying it's the lefty Democratism of today.
Right.
Yeah. So why do you think Ronald Reagan is heralded as this conservative hero?
He's very handsome.
And he's funny.
He is funny. He's got a lot of great one-liners, like really more than any other president in like recent memory, maybe in the last 50 years.
Yeah. And I think he was like, he was funny and relatable and understandable in sort of the modernist sense. Whereas for Trump, it's sort of like he exists in a postmodernist sense of being funny and everything. And so that's just like completely different. And I think, you know, everybody, and we're stuck in the society of post-modernity, and people are just looking back for the last rope through the hole. And I think that for a lot of people on the right, Reagan is that last thing.
That's a really way to look at it, I think. Yeah. I'll just throw in that I think there were three presidents of the 20th century that were supremely good at communicating with the public, and they were the two Roosevelts and Ronald Reagan. Like each of them just had like a special talent for coining phrases, talking to people of all different backgrounds and classes, and just kind of connecting and building a vibrant political coalition.
More so putting half of black people in jail.
I'm so sorry. What was the first part of what you said, Alex?
Besides putting half of black people in jail.
Well, like I said, coalition building. You used to not a kumbaya universality.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
So you put Ronald Reagan above like the two that I was thinking that maybe could have been considered better at this than Ronald Reagan was maybe Bill Clinton, who I think was very relatable. I mean, he played the saxophone on live TV, and that's like pretty much the reason he was elected. And
I'll throw in, though, that he has a much shoddier electoral history than Reagan. Like Reagan has two pretty massive landslides. One of them was one of the biggest in history, whereas Bill Clinton kind of got through by the skin of his teeth in 92 and not so much in 96. It was a better time in 96.
But he also beat an incumbent.
He did. First time he won. But an incumbent after like 12 years of Republican rule, oftentimes, it's just hard for a single party to dominate the executive for that long stretch of time.
That's a good point. And then the other person I would have thought of was Kennedy.
I forgot about Kennedy, actually.
Yeah, I think you would be right if Kennedy lived through his term.
Mm. Yeah. I think a good chunk of Kennedy's shininess was just like his handsomeness in his youth. And like, sure, he was a good speaker, but I don't think we saw that pan out completely. And yeah. I think he's always, I don't want to say he's overrated because of his assassination, but like he is mythologized because of that, you know? And so it's it's hard to compare him to his peers in the century because of that. Yeah, like he is special just because that's such a weird event, you know?
Yeah. And iconic in a lot of ways. I think he did a good job of picking up some of the iconoclasticism of that FDR had. But sort of in a new age 70s way.
You mean early 60s?
Early 60s, whatever.
I do think he kind of helped define the early 60s aesthetic, maybe even more than Reagan did for like the kind of 80s.
Wow.
In their way, you know? Like, wow. Like, because like, there's two different 1960s. There's the 1960s of like the hippies and like Nixon and all that jazz, to steal a line from the Chicago play. And there's like the kind of early seasons of Mad Men, you know, still Cary Grant's still around, JFK vision of the 60s, where like you listen to Frank Sinatra songs and like go down to the beach and to do what the Beach Boys recommend and go surfing USA.
I think JFK was also he was also a poon hound, and I think a lot of people really resonated with that in the instance where he had the front man of being a good family guy and you know, looking good, and then he had all the stuff in the closet, and I think that's something that mirrored a lot of people in America.
Either of you read that note he wrote in his diary or maybe to his brother shortly after his election, where he said, "Well, I guess my poon days are over," and then like I always imagine like a record scratch and the narrator says they weren't when I read that note.
I've never seen that note. I'll have to give it a read. That sounds interesting.
That's cool.
I think I saw it on Twitter one time. It was just, it's very short, but like at one point he's like, well, he just basically says verbatim, "Well, I guess my poon days are over." I just imagine the narrator saying they weren't.
This isn't necessarily my opinion, but I remember somebody saying, I think it might've been Tim Dillon, Nathan, not Nathan. Nathan's my other friend. It would have to be, I think it was Tim Dillon that said, we're due for another good presidential assassination. I think that in a sense that can serve as a cultural reset for us. And I think that it has a purpose. And that almost happened with Reagan with the potential assassination.
Uh-huh.
Almost worked out. That was almost the best case scenario for Reagan, because you know you get a lot of the people kind of standing behind you, and you get to look all tough, and that cultural reset in a lot of ways without, you know, the actual dying part.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think Family Guy actually had a joke where like Reagan is there's no assassination attempt on him, and America like loses the Cold War. Which is obviously hyperbolic, but it's a very funny joke.
I think it'll be a difference depending on who the assassin is. Like if it's some like insane random person, or if it's like another state that sends an assassin.
That is a very interesting way to divide up the epochs of American history, like between assassinations. Like McKinley was the assassination attempt right before Kennedy. I think maybe you could kind of draw like a line from like Teddy Roosevelt, who was obviously right after that assassination and benefited from it, all the way through Kennedy, of like a kind of energetic, popular, progressive leader pushing a certain brand of American democratic republicanism.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a fair point. And then Lyndon B. Johnson he started the same thing with the really energetic liberal.
When he hired the assassination.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, not hired. He didn't have to pay the CIA to do it. So, but I think it's a potential way of dividing up history is to look at the assassinations, and I think we're possibly overdue.
I guess you could, because like who knows anyone between Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt? We all know Grant, but we know Grant from the Civil War, and we just know he was also happened to be president. We don't know him for his presidency. So like maybe that epoch was defined between those assassinations was defined by extremely forgettable presidents.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I'm trying to. Because it was Lincoln, Johnson, Grant, Hayes, Garfield, Arthur.
Washington Cleveland. Was technically assassinated.
What?
Excuse me?
Like accidental assassination when they were like did the leeching, where they just attached a leech to him to suck out the bad.
Well, he wasn't in office anymore.
He wasn't in office,
that's
yeah.
right. He wasn't in office.
Yeah, right.
Was any was there any assassination attempts before?
There was an attempt. Yes. Jackson was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The famous Jackson attempt. A literally insane man tried to shoot him, and this is extremely statistically improbable. But both pistols, which were examined afterward and were proven to be in perfect working order, did not fire. And then, President Jackson used his famous hickory cane to beat the man to a near-death experience and was pulled off by his bodyguards from his would-be assassin. And some people like to joke that the only reason the pistols misfired is because the bullets were quite logically afraid of President Jackson.
So Jackson to McKinley?
Yeah, I mean, and Jackson, like, it's not really, it's barely an assassination attempt because he wasn't hurt at all. Right,
that's true.
Like, yeah. he'd been shot, but like in a separate context, the context of his dueling habit. Sometimes I sort of wish he had like beat that man to death, because then it would have been funny if like a president was an assassin in a way. Like, Jackson's like the perfect anti-president.
Well, they're all war criminals. I mean, they all kill people.
Yeah, right. But in Jackson's day, like, it was even before the first Geneva Convention, so really there is no such thing as war crimes, unless like you count ungentlemanly conduct between officers, in which case I suppose he may have been guilty of that in some context. I'm not sure.
I think this comedian Shane Gillis made the point that, you know, although an assassination on Trump would have been terrible, it would have been funny.
This is maybe not good, so good to admit, but I was sort of hoping he would die from COVID when he was in the hospital, just because I wanted to see like the drama of it.
Have been fascinating. The thought crossed my mind as well. I never hope for a human being to die.
I would have.
You wanted him to die.
I just thought this is the most interesting possible turnout for this election cycle, and that's what I was hoping for. And I thought maybe on some level he wanted that too, because I think in his reality TV show person's heart, he knew that was the best thing that could have happened for the plot.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
And they also took away from us him walking out of the hospital and unbuttoning his shirt with a Superman shirt underneath. You heard he wanted to do that, right?
No, that's got to be a joke, right?
No, that's 100% something he wanted to do, and his advisors wouldn't let him.
Oh my god,
that would have been awesome. That would I love him so much.
I do like the fake quote. It's a fake quote, but it goes around on Twitter all the time. It's like, they tested my DNA. It wasn't like any DNA they ever seen. It wasn't DNA, it was USA, which unfortunately is not a real quote, but it's, I believed it was at first, and I think most people did the first time they saw that too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. I can't believe y'all didn't know he was going to do that.
I believe I've heard that, but I just assumed that was like something someone picked up from an Onion article.
No, that is 100% a true story of something he was going to do.
Satire really is dead, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only satire we have is like post-irony.
Mm. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
I was about to say, what is that?
I don't know what it is. I think it's just a symptom of post-modernity, is post-irony. It's hard to be ironic anymore when the world is the state that it is.
Ever since Harambe was killed, we're in a different world now.
That's the assassination. That's the assassination. That was the cultural reset. And think about it. I mean, you know, have we really been the same ever since?
I cannot disagree with you on that. That is true.
I've heard several people bring that up as like a way of viewing history, as like a post Harambe era. And for whatever reason, that was such a ridiculous situation that nothing has ever like seemed out of the question since then, because the whole thing was ridiculous. A kid falls into, you know, that gorilla tank, and they go and shoot the gorilla.
Yeah, the first thought is just blow its head off.
Do you ever seen the meme where it's the last picture of Harambe alive, and the caption like, kid, listen, I don't have much time. I have information that will lead.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen
the arrest of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
It was also just like all the fanfare. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, they had to kill this gorilla, sadly. It was like just a huge like moment for whatever reason.
It was a huge moment. There was a huge outcry. There were people who thought it was the right thing. I don't understand why. There were people that were really pissed off about it, and I don't really know what they were supposed to do, but it was,
That
you
was
know, that
like
was
the first signal that of how divided of a country that we were, how
people.
polarized our society had become. Because people were willing to pick sides over a dead fucking gorilla.
I do enjoy that meme where it's like it shows like a picture of some like person in a Fallout like setting, like, and he's like in combat fatigues. It's like it all started when they shot that damn gorilla.
I mean, how wrong is it? I don't
It's
know. I just
I can't really say anything against it. It makes sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense,
something.
but it feels right, you know.
It might as well be the lens in which we look at this ridiculous world we live in.
Just for the benefit of the listeners, apparently post-irony is a term used to denote a state in which earnest and ironic intents become muddled. So
And I think that's exactly, isn't that exactly where we are?
it's yeah, that's fair.
I think it's hard to tell when people are
And
trying to.
apparently it's considered similar to quote new sincerity, capital N, capital S, which I'm not going to look up. I don't want to bog
I
us
don't know.
down
I've
with
never heard of that before.
it. Yeah.
I've never heard of it either. Well, I think we're coming towards the end of our time here, but for my two guests on the podcast today, is there anything else you'd like to say on Ronald Reagan's birthday about the great communicator himself?
Sure, I'll just throw in that the Secret Service has a naming convention where all the members of the first family have to their code names have to start with the same letter as the president. For example, Ronald Reagan was Rawhide because of his cowboy aesthetic,
Oh.
and Nancy was Rainbow. And so I was just curious, what would be if either of you were president, what would you and you got to pick, what would you choose as your Secret Service code names and why?
Court, I'll give it to you.
Okay. So when I was in high school, one time I was riding four-wheelers with my friends, and one of my friends turned to me and he said, "Court, you seem like a guy whose nickname would be Gunny." And what was funny about it is he never like mentioned it again or called me Gunny after that. That was never a thing. But I did have a CB radio in my pickup truck because I was a redneck in the South, and my handle was Gunny. So I guess that would be what I want my Secret Service nickname to be is Gunny.
All right, I like it.
What would you pick for your first lady?
Oh man,
Yeah, it's got to start with a G.
gotta start with a G. I don't know, something cheesy like Grace or something like that, like graceful or.
That kind of fits with the whole tradition of First Lady's Secret Service code names. For example, Jacqueline Kennedy was Lace, so Grace would work.
There you go.
Wow. I've never had somebody give me a nickname, so I don't have that for inspiration.
How
Like
about Lewis
Court,
Gear?
Louis Gear. Wow, yeah. I don't know. I feel like it shouldn't be something that can just be someone's name, because I feel like that can
Yeah.
get confusing.
Well, Louis Gear was also a different guest that I had on the podcast, so you wouldn't want to, say that
Yeah,
and get it mixed
I
up
don't want to take
with
someone
Louis.
else's identity.
Yeah.
And
All right. Yeah. Identity theft is a serious
And
phase.
Mr. Gear is too nice of an individual.
Yeah.
I would say probably, I think one day I was coming out of high school, my mom picked me up, and we were talking, and she was like, "God, why do you?" And she said to me, like, "Why do you have to be such a mongoloid?" And that's sort of like an outdated term for a retarded person. And so I think maybe just call me mongoloid. I think I just have the Secret Service do that. And they have to be as sincere as possible whenever they call me mongoloid. And then for my first husband, I would have to say maybe like man.
About Murray?
About man?
No, well, man, that could work. Only if it's a first lady.
Oh,
Then
okay.
call her man. Marsupial.
Marsupial. Oh gosh.
Mongoloid and marsupial. Those are my two. So that by the time they get the name out, both of us have already died from the assassination attempt.
I love it. What a brilliant. I'm happy that you're volunteering for the next to help reset the country into its next era.
I know my place in society's history. What about you, Francois?
Before I tell you I just want to counter your point by saying apparently during the 2008 campaign, the Secret Service gives code names to like the families of the candidates in preparation. Mm-hmm. And apparently Meghan McCain, John McCain's daughter, her Secret Service code name was Peter Sellers, like Peter Sellers, the actor, except it was her Secret Service code name.
Meghan McCain?
Yeah.
Wow, she was... I want her to die even more now.
I mean, you know, you just say you can't steal someone's name, but they stole the name of a very famous actor and just gave it to Meghan McCain.
That's a stain on his legacy.
Yeah. Anyway, but mine would be my Secret Service code name would be Leviathan, because I happen to share a birthday with Thomas Hobbes, whose seminal political work was Leviathan.
Mm. What about for your first lady?
Hmm. I can't think of anything quippy off the top of my head, so I'll just say lady, because it starts with an L, and I'm appeasing the convention that way.
Perfect. Well, Alec, Francois, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's always such a pleasure to have both of you on, and I hope the three listeners, enjoyed it as much as I did.
Thank you so much for having us, Alec. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a great time to have a good conversation with my friend, Francois.